Hello. Welcome. Listen, there's times I'd be scattered. You know, there's times I sat down this morning, and here's a funny thing. I sat down this morning and said the rosary. I'm almost ashamed to tell you that. I don't understand sometimes why it is with men. We can deal with meditation. It sounds, you know, like a space that you can enter into, whereas the rosary is so surrounded by ideas of the feminine that we're afraid to go in there. We associate it with mammies and other old women, to be honest. And yet, the rosary is an extraordinary, helpful way of meditation. I have to say, like, when I meditate in a Buddhist way, I'm using my body in a very physical discipline. And when I do it with the rosary, it's like I'm all over the place physically. But the rosary does settle me down. Now, I don't pray very often. I'd have to say that. And I pray irregularly. But I still get an enormous amount of pleasure and joy looking at icons, lighting candles in front of icons. And sometimes being still and serene. And I suppose sometimes it feels like meditation. And I go haphazardly from one thing to another. And I don't care, because it's like I pepper my life with different forms of meditation, but gradually they all coalesce, they all come together. And there was a great idea. I always remember learning a great axiom in Buddhism, to make all practice one practice, you know. And that fits in with the idea of theosis in the Orthodox Christian tradition, you know, that eventually in life you're just absorbed by God. And that all fits in with another idea. An idea I heard only this morning on the radio or on a podcast. Somebody was talking about, like, that God is not a being, God is being. God is not a being, God is being. So I'm scattered. And sometimes the rosary settles me down. And it's like, I think one of the mistakes people make with prayer or with meditation is you think, like, you have to get yourself ready to be 100% focused at the very beginning. And so because you can't do that, you don't do it at all. But I work sort of backwards. So I say to myself, if the rosary would take me 20 minutes, saying it slowly, then by the 19th minute, my mind will have settled down. It's not going to be settled down for the first prayer I say in the first minute, but it will settle down. And so the rosary is like a spiral stairs downwards into some sort of well of calmness. And I think that's the difference between the rosary and other forms of meditation, where if I'm thinking like about a single-pointed meditation, if I'm thinking about a candle in front of me, or if I, you know, even if I use an icon or an image of a Buddha or something, and I'm going to watch the breath, and I say, watch the breath. So I'm breathing in, breathing out, and I'm watching the breath. But it's like it's very easy to clench your fist. You know, to have that sense of, I'm doing this. And I'm doing it now. And I should be doing it good. And it reminds me of the time that I was up on Skellig Michael. And up at the very top were the beehive huts are. And I went into one hut and there was a woman in it and she had a tiny little candle lit. Now it would do no harm, really. But at the same time, it would be against the rules to light anything inside one of those beehives. And she had this tiny little nightlight and she was in a lotus position and she was meditating. And I couldn't resist, just for the fun, I was a bit high. So for the fun, I said to her, "You're not supposed to light candles in here." And she was in what you would imagine was a calm, tranquil position, you know, in the lotus position and her palms of her hands upward, the tops of her hands resting on her knees, her eyes just slightly closed. She was observing. And she suddenly turned to me and said, "Would you ever fuck off?" And I just burst out laughing. Because it showed that even though she was working at meditation at the top of Skellig, she was working at it too hard. And it's a fierce difficulty, I suppose, with meditation, that you can grasp it or try and grip it or try and do it right. And you might say, well, if you don't try and do it right, how can you do it at all? And that's a fair point. It's a kind of dilemma. But that's where I found the rosary always very valuable because I said to myself, it's 20 minutes for me to say the rosary at a kind of a medium, slow pace. And so I had to say to myself, well, by the end of it, I will have settled. I'll be in the moment of calm abiding. And so I don't even kneel or sit in one single position, or I don't try and get a proper posture at the beginning of it. I feel that'll come at the end of it. And very often it does. So I'd be there, I might be in my room, and I would have the door closed, so it's a very private space, and I'd get out the old rosary beads. And I have different types of rosary beads. I have a rosary bead that I got when I was ordained a priest. And they're very precious to me. I have a rosary beads that I got in Assisi. One time I was there with the family and I was buying little things in the gift shop. My daughter was with me. And they're precious to me. And I have a rosary beads that somebody gave me in Knock. I have beads that I associate with different people or different times in my life. I even have a big gold rosary beads that belonged to my mother. And before her, I know that they belonged to my grandmother. And they were around the fingers of my mother at one stage. And I often feel that sense of their energy when I look at them. I don't use them very often. I have them sitting on a shelf beside an icon, but they are precious to me. So the rosary beads are something that I might use a particular rosary bead, and I would start mooching around the room as I'd be saying the prayers. And it's only gradually when I'd be saying the rosary that I would maybe settle in a chair or settle at the window looking out at the yellow gorse, or at the little buds now that are coming on the cherry tree just outside my door. And then, you know, my eye would settle on that as a natural focus. My eye would settle on one branch or one leaf or one little yellow bush. As a natural focus, it would be the same as if I had originally picked a candle to look at. Or an icon. So it's almost as if I'm not enforcing the shape of my stillness. I'm not making my body still. I'm allowing my body to be stilled. And I'm allowing what's out there to come through its own lens to me. So my stillness, I think it happens all of us, you know, when you have a beautiful moment by the sea or by the lake or by the mountain or walking in the park or looking at a little child in a cot or whatever, when you have a beautiful moment, it comes to you. It arrests you. You don't say to yourself, I'm now going to have a beautiful moment, and then you turn your eyes to the ocean. No, it's like it shocks you, or some beautiful bird that you didn't expect lands on the bird feeder. And you're drawn out into it without thinking. Now, I think there's something here which is really, really precious to me, and maybe it's really worth sharing with you, you know, that there's a way of coming into stillness that is allowing the stillness to draw you into it, rather than in some way using mental activity to get yourself there. So you could be very disciplined about meditation. You could do it at the same time every morning. You could do it for the same amount of time. You could use single-pointed meditation or a breathing exercise or whatever, and you'd be really sort of very focused on it. But you could be gripping it with a clenched fist. You could be kind of in your mind. You know, there's a clenched fist in your mind, and it could be like saying, oh, I have to do this now. I think that sometimes a lot of people in religious life have that danger. I mean, we who are not in religious life have the danger of neglecting prayer completely. Those in religious life have the danger of gripping their prayer with a tight fist. And making of it something ordinary. Something that involves only them. So you could have somebody in a monastery and they'd be walking around doing prayers, doing the rituals, and yet they'd totally be disengaged from God's presence. Because they'd be gripping the moment themselves. And I sometimes think that psychology in the 20th century didn't help us with this matter, because it allowed people a space to think about how even God is an emanation of our own brains. That even the whole shape of, you know, matrix of mythological reality is actually a construct. It's kind of emerging from our brains. In our brains. Conscious or unconscious. And so we don't step over that threshold, that discovery that I'm not doing this, but it is God who is doing it in me. All that we have accomplished today, no, all that we have done today, one of the Old Testament writers said, all that we have done today, you have accomplished in us, O Lord. All that I have done today. So a lovely prayer is to say, thank you, Lord, for all I have done today and which you have accomplished in me. You know, your life is not, you're not alone. You're not, I'm not alone in this room. I'm present with you. You're present with me. And some new people joined up the podcast over the past 3 or 4 days. I see their names. I know that you're there. I know you're present. Even though there's a time delay, and you're not in the room physically, but you are in another deeper way. And I'm with you. But in another way, we're not alone because there is God's presence. It's everywhere accomplishing in us what's happening. That's a big idea, I know. And I didn't mean to get into such a big idea. I only got into it because I was talking about how I said the rosary in a very undisciplined fashion. But let me just play with this for a minute. Because the idea of being in the world and doing things and yet knowing that in everything you do, it is not you who does it. It's God is accomplishing it in you. You might say to me, well, that's like inviting in the idea that, you know, you could be doing bad stuff and you're kind of, you know, doing it with God. No, the more you think about how God works with you, the more likely you are to do the will of God. It's an unnameable space. It's like floating on the ocean. It's like breathing. You can't really explain what's happening in the present moment. But you know as well as I do that when you're at your most peaceful in the present moment, it's like you're floating. You're like floating on an ocean. And the ocean all around me is the yellow gorse outside the window, the cherry tree with its little buds, and beyond that the lake, and beyond that the mountain, and beyond that, above that, white big clouds, big white clouds, and blue behind the clouds. That's the whole scene that I'm looking on, that is all around me. And I belong now in this moment here, in this space as I describe it here. I have come to be, over 70 years, I have come to be through the evolution and process of the entire universe. Come to this moment, here I am, here I am. Not by my own will, but like something floating, like a leaf floating on the river. And also I feel that word in me that says, here I am, Lord. That's a lovely prayer too. Here I am, Lord. It's like as if he was looking for you. Here I am, Lord. You can say it at any moment. It can come into your head. You see something beautiful, it draws you in. It's not you that chose to look at the beautiful bird. It's not you that chose to admire the flower. It's the light on the flower, that yellow on the gorse, radiant, that is coming at me, assaulting me. And I say, here I am, Lord. I am here. And just keep in mind that amazing, amazing idea contained just in a single phrase, you know, that God is not a being, like an entity with other beings. God is being. That's the key that to everything about God as the oneness, as oneness, Atman is the saying, I think the Hindu, you know, or just the enlightened being as is said in the Buddhist tradition. And if you take the whole process of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all related to the book, all going back to Abraham, who's the one who who gives us this sense of oneness, that God is one. In the Jewish tradition, the prayer people say every day, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is one. The Lord your God is one. And then you have Moses and the burning bush, and you know he says, "Who are you?" And the voice says, "I am who I am," because it's like I am existence itself. I'm not a category within existence. I am not an entity. And that's probably what happened over the hundreds of years in Europe. We began to make God into an entity. And of course, the minute we made him into an entity, a masculine entity, it's like, well, is he all powerful? And if he's all powerful, then I'm not free. And so we grow up with Richard Dawkins. There's a new sense of God's presence. You can feel it awakening everywhere. You can feel it. You can just feel it if you're still. There's another lovely line: "Be still and know that I am God." Be still, and that's it. Just be still. And that's the value of all meditation. The sense that everything is being accomplished in you. You are God. Like, it's amazing stuff. I say a sentence and I have to stop and leave a pause because it's too big to just say it and go on to something else. You are God. God is working through you, accomplishing his love in you. And every time you pray or meditate, it's not you that are doing it. It's God is doing it. And every time you turn towards an icon, turn towards a candle, turn towards that moment of focused, single-pointed meditation, it's not you that's doing it. It's God that's doing it. He's calling you. And that's the way I think about, like, if you want to pray, and you clench your fists, you're lying in the bed, it's 7 a.m, and you say to yourself, I better get up now and do this new discipline. I'm going to pray for Lent or something, or I'm going to meditate for the next 30 days, or for Ramadan, whatever. And you say, I'm going to do this. And if you're trying to do it on your own ability, you won't get very far. Because you're bringing a kind of a motivational intensity to it. And if only we could allow our sense of prayer to happen as responding to an invitation, as real as any invitation that you might get in the post, but responding to it in the moment, that it's like if there was somebody outside the door waving at me, I would instantly go out to them. And that's what's happening when I look at the lake, at the tree, at the flower. And just letting yourself float in that moment. I don't know why I say float. I don't know. I remember when I used to go to Inishgrown 30, 40 years ago, and I would swim even though I couldn't swim. So Inishgroan is in near Ballina. It's a beautiful, long, long beach. And I would get into the water and I would float. I would lean back, let my back touch the water, and then I would float. And I used to say to myself, it was a line I got somewhere in some Asian text, relax in Alaya. And I'm not very well versed on this, but Alaya was a word I had found in some text which kind of meant samsara, or, you know, the cosmos in its surface level. All reality as it appears before you. And the text was saying that you could think about all reality that is before you as if it were an ocean. As if the cherry tree, the gorse, the mountain, the clouds, the grass, the wild rose, as if everything out there and everything in here, like the door, the ceiling, the apex ceiling and the girders, the kind of wooden crossbeams, as if every part of reality as I experienced it was a sort of ocean. And my response to it was to relax into it, like to float on it. It's a fascinating kind of process sometimes to do it as a single exercise. Just relax into Alaya. Just into the moment as if you were literally floating on the ocean. So you're gripping nothing. You're feeling that I can't explain it, but I can only say try it. Be still, be still, be still. In any moment, and you'll feel there's a sense of just being here is like floating. So there's something sustaining you. And when I come to pray, rather than control that moment, I try and acknowledge that I'm being called by all those beautiful material things that are out there. They are inviting me into the moment. And therefore, sometimes when I'm using a rosary beads, I will usually create a safe space. So if I'm in my studio, I'll close the door, or wherever I am. I might be up if I was walking. It's not something I'm going to do on the main street. I don't want to be seen with a rosary beads on the main street. They'll think I've gone mad. In fact, I don't want to be seen anywhere with a rosary beads because it's a very private thing. Prayer is a really private, deeply private, most private thing that you could do. But it's also the most satisfying in relation, I think, to dissolving loneliness. The private place is, if you can penetrate your own private centre, you will dissolve your loneliness. Loneliness is like a wet coat. You know, it's like some damp thing that clings around you. But at the very centre, inside, if you can kind of discard the coat, get rid of the loneliness. Think about loneliness like a coat that you can take off. Well, if you take it off, there must be something inside that is, that it's really kind of your real self, your naked self. So the loneliness is a coat. It's like uncomfortable. I want to take it off. Well, if you think there's nothing inside, then you're never going to do that. And you can get stuck with the loneliness because you don't go into the center. What's at the centre is prayer. This sense that in the present moment, you're actually being called. You're being invited into this moment. And that sounds like a relationship. So the loneliness goes. So when I want to do that with a rosary, I don't sort of clench the fist and say, I'm now going to pray. I'm now going to do it properly. No. I let my mind wander. I could be looking at this, that, or the other. I could be walking up and down. I could be just really doing anything distracting. But gradually, through the space of those 20 minutes, my body will begin to still. My mind will begin to still. And I will find myself at the end of the 20 minutes in a still meditative position. We used to do something similar in Jampaling, a house of Tibetan Buddhist practice. And in the morning, we would do Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga. I've spoken about that before, and there's a podcast somewhere back there that you can get where I describe the whole process of that prayer, beautiful prayer, Guru Yoga. But in that, we used to do a meditation of 30 minutes afterwards. And again, you'd realize that the prayer settles down your mind for the stillness. So that at the beginning of the prayer, you might be quite distracted, but by the time you come to the end of the prayer, 10, 15 minutes later, your mind has settled. And I remember many years ago in the 1970s being in the seminary in Maynooth, and in the morning there was morning prayer. And I loved it because you were there every morning and you got into the routine and you didn't have to worry about the routine because there was a bell went. At 6:30 in the morning, the bell would ring outside and then somebody would ring a bell and they'd come along every corridor. And you'd hear them in the distance, you know, they'd be on the third floor. And then they'd come down and you'd hear them on a second floor, your floor. And the bell moving up and down the corridor. And that was, the first bell was the one outside. And then the second bell was the bell that, you know, passed your door. And then there was a third bell that would happen. And you'd need to be fairly moving because the third bell was the last bell just before the moment where you should be in the oratory. And I remember on winter mornings, there was a walk to the oratory. You know, you'd have to walk across from one house. It's called Logic House. And you'd pass a football pitch. And then you'd pass where there was a big crucifix. It was like a grotto, an outdoor crucifix. And you'd pass that heading for the oratory. And I just used to love that walk. Sometimes a little bit of snow or sleet on the ground, sometimes frost. Sometimes the stars of heaven still shining. Sometimes the moon. Always that crucifix, the white body of the dead Christ on the cross. I used to love it. I don't know why. It was intensely sensual in a kind of a strange, tortured way, I suppose, which focused you on the fragility of human life, even though I was only 19 or 18 at the time. And then you got to the oratory. And everybody together began the first prayer of morning prayer. This would be 7:00. I remember the first prayer was, I'll see, can I remember it for you without any text. Come, ring out our joy to the Lord, hail the rock who saves us. Let us come before him giving thanks, with songs let us hail the Lord. A great God is the Lord, a mighty God. In his hands are the depths of the earth, the heights of the mountains are his. To him belong the sea, for he made it, and the dry land shaped by his hands. Oh, that today you would listen to his voice, harden at your hearts as at Meribah. And on it went. And it'd be said in a very scattered way, like everybody wouldn't be in unison. So it'd be a cacophony of mumbling. But by the time you would come to the end of the prayers, the morning prayer, you'd notice that the voices were in unison, that they were absolutely in step. And that was because people were, you know, unconsciously they were using the prayer to become focused. And by the end of the prayer, everybody was precisely exactly together. And then there was silence. And you fell into silent meditation. So the prayer, when you think about it, can very often be the pathway towards single-pointed meditation, rather than, you know, kind of suddenly jumping in with a sense of focusedness. People say, I can't pray because I can't focus on the prayer. But sometimes the prayer is the pathway towards being focused. It gets you there. And that's the way I think of the rosary. And when you get focused in saying the rosary, it usually happens somewhere in the middle of it, and you realise that a phrase has triggered you. You know, that you're mumbling the prayer, let's say, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee, and you're mumbling it over and over again without fully being inside it. And then at some stage, on the fifth mystery or whatever, you know, you're saying, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. And let's suppose that phrase hits you now and at the hour of our death. And you suddenly realise you're asking Mary to pray for you, which is to intercede for you, to kind of, to be an aspect of that which is human, that is touching the divinity, that pray for us now and at the hour of our death, and at the hour of our death. And that begins to matter to you in that moment now. Just in that moment, just you fall, it's like falling into a big hole, a big abyss of clarity. You can suddenly hear your words as you speak them. And you suddenly feel you're inside the meaning of the words. And you've got there simply because you have been saying the words over and over again, repeating them. Because that's what the rosary is. It's a repetition of an incantation. You've also been using thematic ideas like, you know, the sorrowful mysteries. And it might be something like that that actually triggers your consciousness into stillness. It might be that you just say, and fifth sorrowful mystery, Jesus dies on the cross. And you just say, Jesus dies on the cross. And suddenly you have this intense sense of being aware of saying the words and being conscious of the words and feeling you're inside the words. Jesus dies on the cross. And so when you get to one of those moments, I find there's time to stop. You know, there's time to stop. Just pause with the moment and savour being inside the words. And then go on slowly to the next phrase. And now you find what's happened is that you were doing the rosary at a certain pace. The actual saying of the rosary is what brought you into stillness. And now gradually you have found yourself somewhere in there before the end of your rosary, you found yourself in a still position. You might be standing, you might be looking out a window, you might be sitting, but you found a stillness in yourself. And you're conscious that your whole body is still, and you're conscious that your mind is still, because you're completely fully inside each word you're saying. And when and if you get there, you just savour it. You just continue on nice and easy. And you don't try and hold on to it. If, you know, if your mind does wander, it's okay. Keep going. Keep saying the next prayer. But all the time, it's like, if you get to a stillness, you're being invited into it and you're responding. You becoming still is a response to an invitation. And that's the magnificence of the rosary, which I do not say regularly, but I say occasionally. I do not pray regularly, I pray occasionally. And what I also feel about that is that also is a response. So, in other words, if God is accomplishing in you all that you do, sometimes there's no need to do much. And I don't mean that as being lazy, but that you don't get up in the morning with the tightest grip, that you are 100% going to control the day and what you're doing it. Rather, you're going to be open to be responsive to the situation as it arises. And you're going to feel that all the time you're collaborating with God, who's inviting you in each situation to make your move. And then you're never lonely. You're never acting just for yourself. You're always, in a sense, floating in the present moment, like on an ocean. Every moment you're finding stillness. It's like you're making music. It's like you're making music with a musical instrument, but between every note that you make, you're finding silence. Silence. Because silence is what makes the music. That stillness between the notes. Every note falls into silence. Every note comes out of silence. And now this is how you're beginning to live. You're beginning to live in this stillness, where everything is an invitation. Knowing that God will accomplish in you all that he wills. And so your prayer is not like a routine in the gym that you might make for yourself to improve your physical health. It's a 24/7 response to the opportunity and possibility to be still. I did this, I'll tell you why I did this podcast, and it's one of the most personal podcasts I've ever done, so it may be, you know, less successful because I'm trying to say and share things that are just impossible to share. But, and by the way, it's another way to think about these podcasts, that I'm not a teacher, I'm not a, you know, a professor, I'm not telling you how to do things, I'm simply sharing how I do them, because that's my story, and I'm a storyteller. So I'm sharing what I do at a very personal level, not that it will kind of transmit to you as sense, but somehow sharing it is what the dynamic of you listening and me talking is about. It's like, because I have this path, you have your path. By me sharing, I validate you sharing. So my prayer is not successful. It really isn't. I'm lazy. I'm undisciplined. But I also know, as I get older, that all prayer is a response to the one same single invitation to awaken into the present moment. And that sometimes prayers like the rosary, rather than think about them as I have to do it right, just find a place where you're completely private, give yourself 20 minutes and rattle it out. And you'll find that by the end of it, the actual saying of the prayer has settled you down and you're now experiencing a stillness and a calmness that is called meditative samadhi, calm abiding. And I did this because of two reasons. One is that beautiful man Charlie Bird passed away, and his funeral service was during the week. May he rest in peace, may the angels lead him into paradise. He was such a beautiful, bright light in our world. But I heard one interview that moved me, and that was Daniel O'Donnell, the singer, was telling the story on the radio that there was one night at the Late Late Show he was on, and separately Charlie Bird was on, and Charlie Bird was talking about his illness at the time, motor neuron disease. And afterwards, both of them were in the green room. And Daniel O'Donnell, instinctively wanting to do something good-natured to reach out to Charlie Bird, he gave him his rosary beads. It was like an instinctive thing to do because Daniel O'Donnell had his rosary beads in his pocket. And that tells you something about Daniel. And he just said, here, take these. And then after a couple of hours, he was worried. You know, later on, he was really worried. Did he do the wrong thing? This is now a story he told himself, Daniel. And he was worried, did he do the wrong thing? Like, it could be seen as insulting. You know, there's a lot of people now would take it, you know, that have different reactions to you offering them a rosary beads, especially if you were sick. But Charlie Bird did not take it badly. He took it very, very deeply and profoundly. And apparently that rosary beads was a great symbol and strength to Charlie Bird in the years afterwards as he was struggling with illness. And I heard that story on the radio and I just thought, you know, I must share something about the absolute wonderful tool, if you like, instrument that rosary beads is. And they connect you with the people who gave them to you, or the people who used to have them, or the place that you got them. You know, you get a little pair of rosary beads in, you know, a monastery, or in Knock, or at some shrine, or on the occasion of some beautiful event, or on a debt. You know, there's different, or you inherit them, as I did. You know, imagine that, like inheriting your mother's rosary beads, and then thinking, I could use them, you know. So they're so energetic. They're sort of, they contain an energy, rosary beads. Psychic energy from other people. And that's wonderful about them. But they are a wonderful tool or instrument to bring us into serenity. And as I say, it's not the serenity that you try and get with your clenched fist. It's not the serenity that you try and get, like, I have to do this right, so now I'm going to do this. Because that's what puts people off. That's why you end up not using the rosary beads, not saying rosaries. But if you could just think about it as a pathway into the serenity, in a private space, anywhere you go, you could be driving a car. You'd pull over first, obviously. I would not recommend doing anything except concentrating when you're driving a car. But you're going somewhere. It's a 2-hour journey. You're gonna pull over for 15 minutes and you're going to have the most beautiful experience that you'll ever have. You're going to stop. You're going to drop out of life. You're going to check yourself out of the frenetic, clenched, fisted way that your life is going. And for 15 minutes, you find a lay-by or a little bit that looks out on a lake or a car park, and you just pull over. You stop and you take them rosary beads and you spend 15 minutes to 20 minutes. And you don't expect yourself at the start of it to be like all focused. No, but just go through the routine of that prayer, and by the end of it, you will have found serenity. You will have realized by the end of it that you're experiencing in life, in every moment in life, an invitation to be present. And it's an invitation from somebody else. Not from a being. Not from a being, but from being itself. That being, that conscious being in all things is inviting you into this moment, like into eternity. Dissolving all your loneliness and bringing you to peace, knowing that you're present to the mystery of life itself. That's what the Rosary Beads does. And I just had to share it. Thank you for being here. Bye-bye.